I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Will Hyatt get a coveted place on the plaza, and will UMKC develop a downtown arts campus? Are you planning a trip to the Alamo Drafthouse Cinema, which has taken over Power and Light's Main Street Theater? They're just a few of the big business developments occurring in the area, and today Kansas City Star reporter Kevin Collison shares details on what's changing in our fair city. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Hyatt wants to boost its presence in the Kansas City market, this time on the Country Club Plaza. But is this plan going to spark more controversy? The bi-state border wars continue. This time it's Kansas City, Missouri that's doing the poaching. The city is trying to lure a 1,000-employee firm that's now based in Lenexa. The Cordish Company announced last month it's planning to build a 23-story apartment building at 13th and Walnut Streets, and UMKC is seeking to build a downtown arts campus. This morning, we're going to spin the dial on all things development in Kansas City with the Star's development reporter, Kevin Collison, because there's just so much going on these days. And Kevin, welcome back.
Good morning, Steve.
Always good to
be here.
Have you. Well, you just began a story in the newspaper this way. You wrote this: a sense of development momentum has returned to downtown Kansas City after several years of relative dormancy. And if the plans disclosed the past 3 weeks are successful, more people and activity are on the horizon. That's pretty upbeat news in a very down economy.
Well, it had been a long, dry spell. Part of that had to do with the economy, which was particularly difficult beginning in 08 with real estate. And part of it had to do with the former mayor, Mark Funkhauser, who was not known for his welcoming attitude towards development. So we do have some things. You mentioned them. Cordish came out with this announcement that they want to build a high-rise apartment building. They also want to rehab the old Midland office building, which would add more than 300 apartments to downtown. The timetable's still a little squishy, but they say they want to get started sometime early next year.
Well, clearly Cordish is trying to boost residential development around the Power and Light
District.
It's
definitely part of the whole idea. There's been a big push downtown to get more people living there. The downtown council has got a goal of doubling the downtown population. They'd like to see a couple of thousand apartments underway within the next couple of years, so this certainly helps. And it also would help bring more business to the entertainment district, which we all know has not met expectations and is still getting a significant city subsidy here three, four years after it opened.
You know, it's funny. When I first came to town back in 86, I was down on the plaza, and someone said, if you want to live in this part of town, there's an office on the plaza. You go see, I forget her name, Myrtle, and Myrtle will help you find and a place in the immediate area. And sure enough, I went and saw her, and she wrote down on a sheet of paper three or four sites, and I ended up living up the hill at 51st and Wyandotte for a number of years and just loved it up there. But clearly, that's how the plaza used to keep people density around.
Oh, definitely.
There,
very much so.
Very
and that
hard.
Was part of the whole debate over the Highwoods office building that was proposed for the site of the Neptune Apartments. I mean, there was the issue about whether it respected the plaza's height requirements, et cetera. But there were also a lot of people saying, hey, you don't want to get rid of some of this residential population that helps. And one of the big problems downtown right now is there is a dearth of apartments. It's a 92-93% occupancy downtown. Mm. And I hear from a lot of realtors that they have a heck of a time finding a place, particularly an affordable apartment. Not that this high-rise that Cordish is talking about is what we would call affordable, but it's still market rate. But it's definitely – there is a market there for more residential. They're just having a heck of a time meeting it.
So the fact that Cordish is willing to build a high-rise complex here begins to suggest that what? That the existing conversions of lofts and old buildings into apartments, that's sort of been completed. That phase is over with, I
guess. Well, you're right, Steve. Actually, you know, most of the housing that's been built downtown over the past 10-plus years has been rehabs of historic buildings using state historic and federal historic tax credits. We are there are still a few buildings left that would be ideal candidates, but there's been a lot of people waiting for that new construction to take place. And one of the reasons the city, and again, this is another deal where they're going to get assistance from the city, it's about $8 million. It's still very expensive to build new, and it's hard to get the kinds of rents that you can get maybe in a Minneapolis or a Chicago to support apartments. And the cost of building is about the same, whether it's in Minneapolis, Chicago, or Kansas City. So it's new construction. We're on the cusp. They're starting to get rents that make sense to help make these deals make work make sense financially. I think the magic number is about $1.50 a square foot these days. Mm-hmm. There's a new apartment project going up near the plaza, 51st and Main, that they're shooting for that kind of rent. And that kind of rent amount is the kind that I think the private sector says will make that kind of private construction pay off financially.
Well, you know, if the downtown council wants more residents downtown and the market is pretty much saturated, you know, Cordish is building this building, but what else is in the works to sort of achieve the goal the council's talking about?
Well, the East Village project has been hanging around for more than 6 years. This is a big area of real estate downtown, just to the east of Vilas Davis Park and
City Hall.
City Hall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, the folks at Swope Community Builders got the development rights to that back in 2005. The city cleared a lot of land to help make it happen. So far, we've only seen one 50-unit apartment building go. You know, so there's definitely opportunities there. That area was slated to have more than 1,200 apartments. So far, we've got 50. You've got still some opportunities in the River Market area. A lot of opportunities in the Crossroads, which would kind of segue into what we were talking about or what you led in with the UMKC potential coming downtown. So there's still, you know, opportunities. One of the problems is assembling the land. That's not the issue in East Village. It's there. But, you know, it's there are still owners who think their property is worth a lot more than it actually is, which drives up the price. And the developers have to get that land at a rate that they can build on it and still make a return on their investment.
I mean, is that the issue? Because if the market is saturated and the ground is available, what's holding
everything
back?
Well, the ground's available again. In the East Village, it's ready to go. What's holding up Swope there, I can't really tell you right now. You know, some of the other sites, for example, some of the vacant properties in the Crossroads area or even in the downtown loop, you know, I'm not really sure why those haven't been available yet. Again, I think part of it's the economics. One of the tough things about developing anything downtown is you have to provide parking, and usually that means structured parking, which is a lot more expensive than just having a parking lot. So there's definitely some financial challenges. Again, that's why Cordish is getting some help from the city to make this high-rise happen. And they're also going to have to try to work to find parking, although they've got a garage there right now. There always was a high-rise tower as part of that whole original Power and Light District plan, and that garage there where Cosentino's is, most of the parking, if not all the parking, for this high-rise would come from that parking garage.
But you can sort of see the domino effect, though, here, right, and why this is so important for downtown Kansas City. You know, if you get more folks living down there,
sure,
then the idea of a streetcar system, mass transit becomes a whole lot more appealing. Perhaps the subsidy the city's paying to cover the Power and Light District, that begins to decline. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of incentives here to get all this going,
It's definitely a big part of a successful downtown. You know, I was just up in Minneapolis a couple of weeks ago, and just apartment buildings and all over the place. I mean, just it's amazing how much has gone on in some other similar cities to Kansas City. Denver's had a lot of housing, and that's contributed to that 24/7 kind of environment that you want to have in your downtown.
So if you're guessing here, do you think next 5, 7, 8 years we're going to see more apartments being constructed downtown? Is that only sort of makes sense based on what you're looking at?
It definitely makes sense. There's still, again, there are still some significant older buildings, the Power and Light building. A lot of people think
still
that might
sale,
end up being,
right?
Well, I understand off the record that somebody has got a contract to buy it. I can't really report that yet, but I think that the future of that building is likely going to be apartments. And there are a couple of other buildings. So you still got probably a capacity for maybe another 1,000 units or so in rehabbing older buildings downtown. But the key thing will be, you know, if the builders can get that kind of rent that makes it financially feasible, we'll probably see a real upswing in construction because there is a market. And also, one quick plug, Midtown Kansas City, this outfit, Antheus, out of New Jersey, has been renovating these marvelous old brick apartment buildings on Armour Boulevard. They just bought the old Broadway building, or excuse me, the Ambassador building at the corner of Broadway and Armour. These guys have had a very good record of rehabbing these marvelous old apartment hotels and getting market rate rent for them. They are adding hundreds and hundreds of residents into the Midtown area, which again helps reinforce that density you want for other things to make the city and the urban core particularly healthy.
We're visiting with the Stars, Kevin Carlson. You know, I remember Kay Barnes, when she was mayor, sitting right where you're sitting, and she was talking about the need to double population downtown. So this goal has some legs in terms
it goes back
a number of years.
And what's nice is, again, you know, unfortunately Kansas City just has not had the continuity and leadership that some of the other cities like Denver, Minneapolis, where, you know, a goal is set to increase downtown's population or increase development downtown. You know, we had Kay kick it off big time with the whole South Loop project, and things were really, really a lot of momentum. Then we got hit by both the double whammy of the recession and Mayor Funkhauser, who just absolutely reversed course, which basically cost us several years. And now you got Sly James, who shares many of the same views that Mayor Barnes did. Other cities, you've had a continuity in leadership, and that's one of the things that people have said about Kansas City. You've got to get to a point where it just doesn't rely on one particular mayor being in office, where you've got a community policy that this is something that's important to us. And so I think, you know, hopefully we're going to see that kind of progress, and maybe we've learned from our experience that we just can't keep zigging and zagging as far as city policy goes.
Well, this has never been a city that sort of adhered to long-term planning and, you know, here's the course we've charted and we're going to stick to it going forward. Am I right about that?
Or? Well, unfortunately, I came here in 2001 and things were really taking off, and it was really fascinating 4 or 5 years covering, you know, the Sprint Center, the Power and Light District, the H&R Block, the Kauffman Center. There was just a lot of stuff going on. Well, then, you know, you had the again, and I don't want to beat up too much on Mayor Funkhauser, but he definitely had a completely different approach to doing things. And I take a look at Kansas City history, and it does look like we've got a pattern here where there's a spurt of activity and about 10 or 15 years of inactivity. There's kind of a complacency.
You've written about that.
I've written about it. Again,
cycle,
you know, we had
town.
All the activity in the early 70s when the sports complex and Crown Center and the airport, et cetera, was built. And then we went into kind of the doldrums for a long time, and which is unfortunate because most cities realize you just have to keep building. You just can't say, hey, we got it accomplished. We can sit back now and sit on our laurels.
Now, what kind of impact do you think the All-Star Game had on development? Is there any sort of tangible connection between the big game and anything being built in this town, or is that a stretch?
Well, I don't know about being built. I do think, again, it showed that Kansas City is capable of hosting major events, and I think that's what our Convention and Visitors Association was wanting to prove.
Yeah.
And I think our economic development people used it as an opportunity to show the folks in America that, you know, we're a reasonably sophisticated city with a really good quality of life. So take a look at us. We're not just some flyover cattle pasture. You know, whether there was any significant push towards building, I know there was a buzz out there that maybe this would revive talk about this 1,000-room convention hotel in downtown. To be honest with you, I have not heard that. Mayor James came into office pushing hard on the idea, but I think he found out when some of these hotel developers came back and said, look, we'll be glad to build a city or a hotel here, but we're going to need some significant subsidies.
Tens of millions.
A lot of money. And, you know, as much as people do believe the investment in the Power and Light District, many people do, was worthwhile, it still soured people as far as just the fact that the numbers have not worked out yet. And I don't think anybody for the foreseeable future is going to get into another development deal where the city's credit is being used to back the bonds.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. Kevin Carlson is here. He covers development for the Kansas City Star, and we'll be covering a whole lot of different topics this morning. If you want to join our conversation with your comments, 816-235-2888, our email address, update@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. We have a tweet here. Someone's dropping that the P&L building unofficially under contract, I guess. Nice, but not sure what that means, but some talk.
Well,
that,
you know, again, there's a lot of confidentiality agreements. I can just tell you that I have been in touch with people, and I understand that the building is in contract. Again, you know, I can talk to you on the radio about this stuff. I can't really report it and quote people saying that.
Yeah,
you know, it's part of the how journalism works sometimes.
Yeah. Also, there's some information that Google is going to be having a special announcement. They just announced this morning. They're announcing some development on July 26th at 10:30 in the morning. We don't know what that announcement is yet, but it might be interesting. Maybe we'll get a fuller sense of
what
exactly
Google wants to do
where they're heading here in Kansas City.
It will be really interesting to hear what that'll be. I mean, again, I haven't been covering the Google story closely. I do know that there's a lot of folks out there scratching their head. All right, you're here. We've gotten a lot of great publicity. So what are you going to be doing here? Maybe they'll tell us a little bit more at this special announcement.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here. How's that new downtown bike program doing where you can rent a bike for half an hour and scoot around town? Is it you seeing many bikes flying around
actually,
town?
When I came out here to do the interview with you today, I saw one of the stations, and it looked like half of them were empty. So somebody's using them. It's just a tough time to roll out anything right now that has to do with the outdoors.
I like the idea, though.
I love the idea.
Right now, it's a little too hot for riding bikes.
I was up in Minneapolis again a couple of weeks ago, and they have a similar program called Green Bike. And my friend and I rode our bikes. We went, and he swiped his card. He's a member. And I kicked in a few bucks because I'm not a member. But we rode the bikes over to Target Field, their downtown ballpark. We left our bikes at the station near Target Field, went in, watched the game, came out on our feet, got on a bicycle, and pedaled back to where his office building was. It's pretty slick, and you see people using them a lot in Minneapolis. Of course, they don't have 105 degree temperatures sometimes like we do.
Well, I hope it ends sometime
soon.
Yeah,
I do too.
Julia from Kansas City, Missouri. Julia, you're on with Kevin Collison. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm calling because I have had I'm a traditionally been in Midtown person. I live in South Kansas City now. I left Midtown because of my little kids and just some increasing crime in the area. Now my kids are young adults, but they all want to move to Midtown or downtown, looking at condos or rentals downtown. And they love the arts. They love the whole urban idea. But we've been having this conversation lately. What about crime? What about increased, response time for 911 calls? If we look at repopulating downtown and Midtown, what about the safety issues, the crime issues?
Well, I can't speak specifically. I do know that something that's happened over the past few years that I think is really encouraging is that these areas, particularly downtown and Midtown, have created what they call community improvement districts, and they hire their own people to walk and to make sure
provide
that things
security.
Are being provide security. Yeah. They're not cops. I mean, if somebody pulls a gun and tries to hold up a store, they're not going to do it. But if there's a drunk that's harassing people, or if there's other issues that can, the old broken window theory, you want to get things nipped in the bud before they get worse. That has done a lot, I think, to help the perception of security. There hasn't been, knock on wood, I don't want to wish anything ill, but, everybody's got this perception that downtown's dangerous. But when you take a look at the statistics, very rarely do you have any violent crime down there. There are, and again, I don't want to be a Pollyanna. There's certainly still break-ins, problems like that. But I do think that these community improvement districts have done a lot to try to create a sense of security in these areas.
Okay. And do the people work with the police in developing something like that? Okay,
well, all these security guys, again, they don't have guns or mace or anything, but they do have radios that if they run into a problem and they need more help, they can call the police for help.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you
very much. Thanks, Julia.
You're welcome.
Bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Jake from Kansas City, Missouri. Jake, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Yeah, pleasant good morning, gentlemen. Let's all get our rain dance clothes on. This is just nuts. just one observation. I think the streetcar is smoke and mirrors. A fifth of the money in effective bus transportation would do it. It's just beyond me. And then a quick, what does Mr. Collison think of the Kemper's idea, which I think is a great idea, and we ought to jump all over it, get the Kemper torn down and put up a sensible-sized agricultural emphasis complex down there? The ag economy is going to keep plugging along for the next 50 years, and we may as well ride it.
Thanks, Jake. What do you think, Kevin?
Well, Jake, on the streetcar thing, I think if you look at it as a pure transportation device, you're probably right. You can get a lot more bang for the buck with a bus. But a big part of consideration when you talk about streetcars or any rail transit is their development. spinoff. You get a lot more people willing to invest in new apartments or restoring buildings or opening stores
when they're new and flashy. And people like those things.
But it also is a sense of permanence, and it really does have a development spinoff that buses just don't have. And I got to tell you, I'm not a big fan of the idea of dropping big bucks down in the West Bottoms to tear down the Kemper and build a new equestrian center. I think there have been some reasonable proposals that have been put out there about how you could retrofit Kemper to accomplish some of those goals. And I do think one of the big issues, personally, again, I've lived here for a little over 10 years now, the American Rail needs to get its act together better about how they market that event. It's sprawling out over a couple of months with the various equestrian and rodeo type things. You got the one thing that's the marquee, which is the barbecue, and it's just kind of stuffed under a viaduct down there. I just think that hold activity, as wonderful as it is and important to the history of Kansas City and its traditions, needs to be really rethought before they throw $50, $60 million at tearing down Kemper and building them a new equestrian center.
We're talking with the Star's Kevin Collison about the latest in Kansas City development. Let's flip over to the state line, across the state line, Kevin, and what's new in the Fairway area with that Mission Gateway project that you've written a whole lot about? There was all this talk about an aquarium going in there. Those plans are off, but apparently a big development is coming to Shawnee Mission Parkway and Johnson Drive very, very soon.
Well, it's a seven-letter word called Walmart.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Yeah, to Mission's credit, this has always been essentially a private deal. I mean, Mission, the only money Mission has had in this whole thing is building the storm sewer. The developer, Tom Valente, out of Syracuse, New York, it's been him and his financial backers who bought the old Mission Shopping Center, tore it down, have been sitting on that land, paying a lot of interest on whatever loans they took out for it. They tried, with Mission's encouragement, to come up with a kind of a sexy new urbanism kind of thing that focused on offices and residential and retail with this. And then when that didn't work out, they said, well, we need a anchor attraction. Let's go for this aquarium and Starbonds.
It was going to be a huge aquarium.
It was going to be a big, like multiple times larger than the one they opened up at Crown Center. The marketplace just has not responded. Yeah. So now he did, get Walmart, which always wanted to be in that location, came back around again and said, hey, look, we'd still love to be part of this. I think what we're seeing right now is they finally got a project that looks like it's got the kind of money-generating tenant needed to make it happen. What's going to be important is for Mission to insist at least on the basic philosophy to continue, that this is just not some big box store surrounded by a parking lot, that it will be incorporated into something that will really create some, a mixed use project that does include housing, that does include more than just the Walmart, that creates something that will be, attractive for a long time for Mission, and not just shoving a Walmart that's already at Roland Park half a mile down the road to a new Walmart that's bigger. I mean, that'll be the key thing. Mr. Valente, he's a very nice guy. He insists that that's still their plan, that there's going to be several hundred apartments as part of this deal. There's going to be more retailers. When they can get office, they'll go there. So they're still pushing for something more than just another big box surrounded by a surface parking lot. So hopefully that's going to happen. I'm definitely, going to try to ride herd on this thing. And these guys need to get something done, because that's a lot of land that's been sitting empty for a long time and a lot of money piling up in that deal.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Jacob from Kansas City, Missouri. Jacob, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. I moved to Kansas City a few years ago from Cologne, Germany, and one thing I noticed is that the lack of bike lanes in Kansas City. I'm a biker, and I believe that a lot of people my age bike around the Kansas City area, but it's absolutely dangerous, and there's definitely a lack of bike lanes, and I was curious if there are any works for future bike lanes in the area.
Well, that's called opening up a can of worms, Jacob. Yeah. That's been an issue in this town for a very long time. Good phone call, though.
Yeah, I share your observations. And again, one of the interesting things, and I hate to keep sounding like a broken record, but, it was up in the Twin Cities. They've had a very progressive attitude towards bicycling for a long time. So not only did you have a green bike to rent and ride, you had bike lanes actually dedicated bike lanes in the core of their central business district for bicyclists.
And Kansas City doesn't have that. What is it about Kansas City? Is it a cultural thing? What is it, Kevin?
I think part of it's a cultural thing. Mike Hendricks, one of our colleagues at the Star, has been banging the drum. He's a loyal bicyclist. I know there are some very good people out there who are pushing this. Why we can't just even create some striped, dedicated lanes alongside our streets? There are many wide streets in this town. It's just a matter of getting past some of the inertia around here, and I admire the people
coming.
Who have been pushing.
Progress is
it's slow, but it's
slow,
coming,
but it's coming.
And hopefully
working very hard on it.
People like you, Jacob, will help push that, get involved, because I know there are good people like you who really want to try to make this a more bicycle-friendly city.
Absolutely. Well, thank you.
Jacob, thank you. Good luck.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Debbie from Independence. Debbie, you're on with Kevin Collison from The Star. Good morning.
Good morning. I'd just like to say that as someone who doesn't live downtown and won't be moving downtown, I work downtown, though. I'm a little tired of new projects to get people moving around downtown when there's a MAX bus that works really well. There's now bicycles. We need to seriously look at a way to get people in and out of downtown, from Independence, from Blue Springs. Johnson County is a nightmare. There's two buses in and two buses out and one at 12 o'clock. And that's where the money should be spent, not on another way to get around downtown, which is very walkable, too. I walk it all the time.
Hmm. Kev?
Well, yeah, I think you raised some valid points. I mean, unfortunately, right now, I guess the discussion in Johnson County is even cutting back more on their JOCO service.
Right.
As the previous caller pointed out, buses certainly have a tremendous appeal, and they're much more flexible. And a part of the conversation, and I'm not shoving aside anything you just said. Part of the whole push for rail is not just about transportation; it's about encouraging development along a transit route. But I don't know what I know I drive in sometimes from Prairie Village. I've got many routes to get downtown. I have never had any major traffic problems. I don't know if your route from Independence is particularly difficult or not. As far as driving goes, I think you're alluding more to mass transit. It's, I can't explain the history, but it's just hard. You've got a metropolitan area. You don't even have a metropolitan transportation agency, which is kind of sad.
Debbie, thank you for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck. Yeah. One more call before a break here. Nick from Brookside. Nick, you're on the program.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I had a quick comment about the bike system. I think it's awesome. I think it's a great step in the right direction for Kansas City. But I wish they had locations in Westport, the Plaza, Brookside, Waldo. I think that would really boost a lot of development along that line. I feel like downtown is great, but I feel like they could really expand it and really help out the rest of the city.
Yeah.
And Nick, I think that's the plan. I mean, if downtown is successful, I know they want to expand it to the core at Brookside would probably be a part of it. And I think definitely that is something. And again, in Minneapolis, they have these similar stations throughout what they would call our comparable midtown as well as downtown.
Right.
Oh, okay. Great. And real quick, if I can, another point for the development of Kansas City. My friends and I have always wondered why Kansas City isn't a bigger passenger train hub. I mean, we're so close to so many huge cities, and sometimes they're even too close to fly there. But if we had a better passenger train system, I feel like it would really bring a lot of development to Kansas City and a lot more tourists.
Well, the Obama administration is looking at high-speed rail and the whole thing, and we'll see where we go.
Again, our friend from Cologne could probably talk to us about how wonderful it is to have passenger trains that'll take you all over. Yeah, it's been talked about.
Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with the Star's Kevin Collison. In our second half, we'll talk a little bit more about Cordish and that apartment building it wants to build, UMKC's plans, the Hyatt on the Country Club Plaza, and ongoing border wars. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed our talk yesterday about that massive drug bust in Johnson County, you can find it and all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, Making Government Better Through Computer Programming, plus recent trends in hospital food. This hour, we're talking with the Star's Kevin Collison about development issues in the Kansas City area. Let's go back to the Hyatt proposal on the Country Club Plaza, Kevin. 2 years ago, as you know better than almost anybody, the plaza was the site of intense controversy when Highwoods Properties proposed this 8-story headquarters for the Posanelli Law Firm in the heart of the plaza. Where is the proposed site for the Hyatt, and are we going to see more controversy over this thing or not?
Well, this one is more off to the periphery of the plaza at 46th and Penn. It's just up the hill from the Christ Scientist Church. I guess that's the right way to phrase it.
Right.
So according to the proponents, it does meet the height guidelines of the plaza plan that was adopted back in the late 80s.
So
which
that
was one of the big issues with the former proposal for the Polsonelli office.
So this
building
thing isn't right on 47th Street. It's up
it's
the hill,
up the
a,
hill
little
a little bit behind the church.
And that helps a little bit here.
Yeah, it helps a lot because, you know, there was a major plan developed in the late 80s for guiding future development on the plaza. It called for the taller buildings to be on the periphery on the more upper elevations that surround what they call the Plaza Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's fascinating here, two things that are interesting. We are actually seeing the lessons of that earlier Highwoods proposal being applied here. One of the biggest mistakes Highwoods made at the beginning of that thing with the Polsonelli building is they were very sloppy about how they rolled it out.
Mm-hmm.
Their initial drawing showed this modern-looking high-rise building
right
at the corner of 47th mm-hmm. Broadway, squashing the old balcony building there at the corner. People went ballistic, and understandably so. It not only was a building that was not compatible architecturally with the plaza, it also wiped out a corner that is very much a part of the fabric of the plaza.
Right.
So Highwoods quickly scrambled and very dramatically revamped their design and moved everything up the hill. But at that point, the opposition was mobilized and they had all guns blazing. And these guys with the Hyatt plan, they haven't even released a drawing yet because they've been working with the neighborhood groups
mm-hmm.
to try to come up with something that was palatable to them. So that's the biggest lesson already we've seen. You just don't throw something out there on the plaza and expect everybody to salute it simply because it's a major investment.
Explain something to me, Kevin. You wrote this in one of your stories about this project. You wrote that a lawyer involved with the Hyatt deal acknowledged the plaza was a desirable market for Hyatt, but added that tax incentives were necessary because room rates charged in Kansas City were not high enough to make the project as envisioned work as a purely private deal. I don't get this. I mean, why proceed with the project if it won't make money on its own? Why pitch in a TIF on a project like this if the room rates won't cover the cost of building the building?
Well, it's a good question, Steve. And I guess you get to other issues is, do we want to encourage more development around the plaza? Do we want to replace some older apartment buildings from the 1950s with a flashy hotel that will bring in well-heeled travelers that will have even though it's going to be asking for tax incentives, which essentially means the city, the city's still going to make more money off that property than it would.
And it won't cost taxpayers money.
It's not out of their pocket.
They won't get as much money as they hope to get.
It's a huge discussion when it comes to incentives. In my mind, they're an investment. In return for developing a piece of land that otherwise would have sat there with some older buildings just kind of putting along, in order to justify building a new 12-story hotel that'll bring in all these, there's jobs that are created at hotels. It brings in maybe more of these well-heeled travelers, although, again, you can argue they could stay at the Intercontinental or the Raphael. There's a lot of issues here, but the point is that the city is willing to say, okay, look, developer, you can keep some of the additional tax value in the future that this will generate to help, underwrite your costs. And there are more costs to building in the plaza. You got to build an underground garage, which you don't have to do when you're out in the suburbs, et cetera. I'm not saying there's not ample room for a very strong conversation on this topic. And this may be one of these pivotal TIFs in which the city can say, hey, look, Hyatt, you guys want to be here. You know, we're willing to help you to a certain degree, but we think maybe your ask is too much. So let's start negotiating that. Mm-hmm. I think the city's going to have more leverage on this thing than they've had on almost any other project. So it'll be really interesting to see. But it's all about, you know, okay, you've got people living in these older apartments right now. They pay X amount in property tax. You know, the folks that are living there probably pay X amount in earnings tax, whatever. Is the investment in a new Hyatt hotel that'll bring in a lot of people dropping a couple of hundred bucks a night and eating out on restaurants in the plaza, et cetera, worth that kind of like trade-off, which yeah. the city will get more money than it is off these old apartment buildings, but not as much money if it was a purely private deal. And again, this is money the city doesn't have right now anyway, because right now it's just these older apartments. It's a tough decision. It's a tough, tough call. Yeah.
Our phone number to join our conversation here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, update@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. You know, the border wars are continuing unabated. Now it's Kansas City, Missouri that's doing the poaching. You just wrote about this, Kevin. The city's after a company called FreightQuote, currently located in Lenexa. The firm describes itself as the nation's leading online shipping provider. Kevin, I mean, this is nuts.
Now,
I mean,
The Hyatt, you can actually see, you know, I can see the merits of the argument about attracting a major new investment into the city. This activity in which companies are being offered large incentives simply to cross the state line that don't bring any, you know, the only thing, and again, I'd love to have some economic development professional tell me what is more there than just the fact that they can claim that they've got this new company, because all these people working at FreightQuote, and I don't wish FreightQuote ill at all. It sounds like a great company, but nobody is going to move their house simply because their address for their work has shifted 5 miles down I-435 from the Kansas side to the Missouri side. And this, adding to this, this is a suburban area. These are green fields, as they like to say. This is an area that companies want to be in anyway. And you can take a look at this. You can look at AMC moving out to Lenexa. You can take a look at you got Perceptive Software, which is getting incentives to locate from Shawnee to Lenexa. It's just, we've had civic leaders, we've had outside experts take a look at this thing. It doesn't do anything to benefit the overall metropolitan economy.
Everyone bemoans it. The governors bemoan it. The mayors bemoan
it. The governor Brownback certainly hasn't shown any willingness to back off. And there is a theory here. It's like when you and I were kids during the Cold War, you know, the mutually assured destruction. There's a theory that if Kansas gets its nose bloodied enough by Missouri, they may finally declare a ceasefire. Well, I don't know if there's any merit to that or not, but right now the companies are doing well shopping the states and these incentives that essentially benefit the company's bottom line, but they really don't do anything at all to improve the overall economy of the metropolitan area.
We're talking about 1,000 employees here, and as you point out, it would be the largest company yet in terms of employment to be poached in these economic border wars between Kansas and Missouri.
Right, right. It is. I mean, it started off in earnest a few years ago when J.P. Morgan left Kansas City, Missouri to go out to the Sprint campus.
Yeah.
Applebee's became part of this whole thing. Then the AMC thing dropped. It's just craziness. It really is, by almost anybody's outside objective analysis.
Mike from Kansas City, Missouri. You're on with Kevin Collison from the Kansas City Star. Mike, good morning.
Thank you. A topic that seems maybe not so much economic, more aesthetic, but the Riverfront Park seems to be an issue that is lost a lot of the time. I was in Omaha recently, and they've done a lot with their river, and the city just seems to kind of turn away from it. I suspect it's kind of hard to develop with fluctuations in river levels, but it's a beautiful area and a real asset to the city, and it just seems like we haven't taken a lot of advantage of it. Maybe we could talk about that for a minute, and I'll take the discussion off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, Mike, what's new with the Riverfront Park, if anything, Kevin?
Well, Mike, I'm really familiar with Omaha. I used to live up there, and I was just up on that riverfront back in May, and they've just done amazing things.
It's
you wouldn't
terrific.
Have believed what that area looked like when I was in college back in the 70s. It was just a disaster. Right now, the city, through the Port Authority, has done tremendous things to clean up the riverfront. I mean, there was a lot of waste down there, a lot of concrete that got dumped down there, a lot of tar oil. It was an environmental flop. The table has essentially been set. it's really more now a matter of finding the political and civic will to encourage development down there. There was a lot of talk a couple of years ago about getting
the
federal government locate a building down there. But some of the powers that be in the city said, no, we don't want to do the river. We want to make sure the Central Business District is doing well. So that idea kind of was killed.
And the GSA is still coming, right?
Well, the GSA is now, you know, in my mind, it's a smarter thing. They're not going to build a new building. They're just going to relocate the 1,000 people that are currently at Bannister into existing office space. And believe me, we got a lot of vacant office space downtown. We didn't really need it. But it really is, it's almost a community situation in which, you know, they've done a lot of work over the past 10, 15 years to get that area ready for development. Now it's a matter of somebody, you know, a company or a government agency saying, I want to be there, and B, you know, getting the political momentum behind it to make it work. You know, there's the riverfront in Kansas City is really a pleasant place. I mean, I love to go down to the city market and then take a walk along the path there, and it's ready to go. There's a new access road off the interstate they built, you know, when they did the big Kitbon Bridge. The table has been set. It's just a matter now of, you know, a company saying, hey, I really like that location, I want to be there, and the city being willing to help support that effort.
Okay. Cynthia from Prairieville. Cynthia, you're on the program, and she wants to talk about border wars. Cynthia, go ahead.
Here's a possible suggestion, is that no one really knows what the net results are 1 year later after a company moves from one state to the next or one city to the next. So how about the Kansas City Star might do a story on 1 year later, what are the net results? Did anyone actually change residences? What was the net tax gain? Were there any new jobs developed? And then with that being reported, any politician trying to say that I moved new business to this area can say, wait a minute, that's a great move, but the net results are we lost because of this particular activity. Because right now what is missing is the net result 1 year and 2 years later, and that might be an incentive to reduce the whole-scale border wars.
Spoken like a true editor,
Cynthia.
You've got
a good mind on that front, and it is certainly something that would be a worthwhile endeavor. I'm telling you, though, I'd like to do something like that. It would involve a heck of a lot of time.
Well, that's what interns are for.
Okay.
Well, you know, but the other point is, though, that I also want to make, and it's something that a guy who's an economic development guy in Lenexa, Blake Schreck, was pointing out to me a while ago, and I've mentioned this in my column. Kansas really doesn't have a great deal of interest in the overall well-being of the metropolitan area. To the folks in Topeka, they see Johnson County as being a major economic engine for the state of Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea of, you know, the metro area and the city of Kansas City being a vital part of that doesn't really hold a lot of water. And so they're pushing because anything they can get into Johnson County from Missouri is all, in their mind, a net benefit to Topeka. On the flip side, Missouri, you know, Kansas City on the Missouri side is just not as big a part of the Missouri economy as Johnson County is to the Kansas economy. So, you know, there's going to be some political people. We could probably write the most definitive story in the world that nailed every nickel and dime of the pros and cons of this thing. And for some political guy that says, hey, I got this big company to move from Missouri to Kansas, that's still going to – that'll be all they care about.
Well, I appreciate that. But you know what? I think most people are very sensitive to this issue because that movement does cost somebody something. And I think once it becomes clear what the true net costs are, the political fallout will maybe be more positive because no politician wants a negative PR football.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. No, your sensibility is spot on with this.
Okay. Well, hope the idea has some weight to it.
Yeah,
find me some interns,
you.
Would you?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Fine. All right. Bye.
See you later. Let's go back to UMKC's plans and all this talk that the university wants to build a downtown arts campus, and this just might include this radio station. You know, a lot of people are really excited about this idea. Kevin, what can you tell us about where the process is at?
Well, it all kind of got kicked off about a year ago.
Yeah.
I know that one of the major things that have people fired up is the huge investment that was made in the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts.
This is a natural spinoff, people
say. This would be kind of what is being envisioned would be an initial start with the conservatory moving downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is to create the kind of symbiosis that the Lincoln Center has with the Juilliard School, or I guess the Boston Symphony has with the program there in Boston, is to have, you know, a really terrific venue for the students ultimately to aspire to perform in, that interaction between the professionals of the symphony or the opera, whatever, with students who are studying that to try to raise the profile of the conservatory, which I understand from most sources is one of the better schools in the country to take that even farther. And then it couples also with the idea of bringing more activity, bringing students into the downtown area, which would create more demand for housing, create more demand for coffee shops and restaurants and bars, et cetera. But I think, you know, it's something where UMKC, from all I know, is, you know, that the school needs more space, needs better space. You know, the university campus could certainly use the school space or the conservatory space to fill in other classroom demands. And, you know, you could create some real synergy there between that and the Kauffman Center. You know, there's been some other programs, that bringing the theater down, bringing the KCUR down, as you mentioned, bringing all the arts programs. They've laid out a plan. I mean, it would all be taking out over a gradual period of time. But the first priority would be to get the conservatory downtown. And they've laid out three different choices. They had Helix.
I was going to ask you, what are the sites you're talking about?
You know, after several months of studying, research, et cetera, the folks at Helix Architecture and another firm, I can't remember their names, came up with three suggestions. One is in the Central Business District on top of the Barney Ellis Plaza, basically using the garage there beneath Barney Ellis and going vertical there. The other two ideas are both in the Crossroads, and they would adjoin the Kauffman Center. One would be up at the corner of 17th and Broadway, kind of using that as the center. The other would be...
Which would be very close to the Kauffman Center now.
Oh, well, yeah, no, they'd be both of them. And the one would be just to the east of the Kauffman Center, closer to Main Street. And, you know, personally, I think the Crossroads suggestions are superior in that they would just create more of a synergy between the neighborhood. There's a lot of underutilized buildings and property in the Crossroads that would benefit. And the students, I think it'd be a better environment. They could basically then just migrate into some of the other good things that are happening in the Crossroads.
But there is kind of a hefty price tag here.
Yeah.
This project would cost $166 million.
If fully built
roughly.
Out, you know, with all the different programs. I think the initial push to get the conservatory, I think the price tag's at around $80-plus million for that. One of the things that got quietly approved in the Missouri legislature last year was a bill that
the
would allow
pay a, half of this,
that would pay
like
half
this.
For any kind of a, they would match private funds that could be raised or something like
this. I just
wonder
if the state of Missouri, almost under any circumstance, would have the money, even if this thing was someone offered up the money tomorrow.
That I don't know.
Something else, another project that's getting some buzz also downtown. There's all this talk about this new Alamo Drafthouse Cinema that's coming, the new movie theater.
Right, right, right.
What is it exactly? What kind of movies? What do you know about
it? Well, you know, what I do know is it's the Alamo Drafthouse. They're based in Austin, Texas. They have a fairly successful operation. People say that they really know how to put on innovative programming, creative things.
They sort of do programs around.
Yeah, they'll create movie themes. You know, they'll do first run releases, like the, you know, the big hits. But they'll also kind of do some retrospectives, and they'll do some kind of fun theme things. They sound like very smart operators. They do the food and beverage thing in a big way, and they took over the old Main Street space after our dear friends from Baltimore Cordish couldn't get along with the AMC, and they ended up in a divorce. They had a partnership that redeveloped the Main Street and the Midland. So Cordish now has bought out AMC, and they brought in Alamo. And, I mean, the buzz that we got on the web after we first broke the news on this was the people who have experienced this Alamo Drafthouse really enjoy it. So, and they started off, who could hate this? They got free kids movies now on Saturdays through the rest of the summer. So,
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of a neat gesture towards the community, I think.
You had a chance to go up into the Kansas City Power and Light Building and actually go way up to the top. You wrote a neat story about it, and you were in a place that very few people ever get a chance to go. And this was something of a precarious trip you took, a hazard-filled trip. Tell us about that.
Well, it was a great – it was just one of these wild hair things. I mean, the Power and Light Building, in my mind, is the most iconic building in this city. It's just – when I used to live in Omaha, I'd come down here. That was what I always associated with. So, you know, it's for sale. I called Gib Kerr, the broker. I said, Gib, do you think there's any way we could go up into that Lantern Tower is what they call it up there where the beacons are? And he called their New York owner. They said, fine. You know, it's easy until you get to the 32nd floor. Then you have to start climbing ladders, and you have to go across a catwalk and kind of squeeze yourself through a little trap door into the actual little dome at the very top.
Like, what was up there?
Well, you know, it was – well, first of all, again –
The view must be incredible.
Yeah, well, the view is great, and you just have to respect our ancestors and the quality workmanship they did. I mean, this is an area. I mean, the windows that you see at the very top, the sunburst design that the beacons shine out of, this is beveled glass. I mean, it must have cost a ton just to install these windows. They're beautiful. And again, this is a space that really, you know, in this day and age, they would have just put plexiglass up there and shined a light through it and said, isn't this pretty? I mean, this stuff is just gorgeous in and of itself. And then you get to the very top, and that's a little anticlimactic. It's just this little domed room, and people who've gone up before have scrawled their initials. And there was a great...
did you put yours up there?
I put mine up there. And the guy from... I love the guy back in 1932, 33, I can't remember, you know, shortly after the building opened, some guy from RCA had to install some type of antenna up there on a January day, and the temperature was like about zero. And I can't imagine hanging out there, you know, putting this radio antenna up there back in the early 30s, freezing your tail off. But it just was, and then you get up there and you can go out, and there's a couple of little areas you can stand and look out, and the view is amazing. And what's kind of funny that I got a big kick out of is it's also quite a cafeteria for the hawks that have come downtown. a lot of pigeon remains up there. They use that as their cafeteria. But it was fun, and it was just one of the neat things. And I was really happy that, you know, I decided to write something, and people got a kick out of it because there's so many people in our city who are so deeply tied to these marvelous old buildings we have.
Oh, that's neat. Well, Kevin, always great to have you here. Thanks for the update on all things development around the Kansas City area. Thanks again.
You're welcome.
Kevin Collison covers development for the Kansas City Star. You can find out more about him and get more information about our program. It's all at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow, recent trends in hospital food, plus making government better through computer programming. Today's show is produced by Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.